This afternoon, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 88, the wind light and from the northwest. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 70, the wind will be light and out of the northeast. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 88, the wind light and from the east. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 70 and a light east wind. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high around 90. Sunday night through Monday night, mostly clear with lows in the low 70s. Expect a high Monday in the low 90s with heat index readings around 105. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 90s. Afternoon heat index readings could reach 110 on Tuesday. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 70s, where cloudy conditions were reported, to the low 90s, where skies were sunny or mostly sunny. At Rockford, it was 84 degrees. At O'Hare, 81. In Peoria, 77 degrees. Mattoon, 87. Carbondale, 90. South Bend and Lafayette reported 79 degrees. At Indianapolis and Terre Haute, it was 92. Willard Airport reported a cloudy sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 83, the dew point 72, giving us a heat index of 88. The relative humidity 69%, the wind out of the southeast at 7, and the barometric pressure 30.02 and falling. And at 12:39, 83 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is cloudy. The Arctic tundra has been relatively thunderstorm-free for 10,000 years, but conditions are changing in the far north, and in 2007, a lightning strike caused the biggest wildfire ever recorded on the north slope of Alaska. It burned for 4 months. The tundra is normally a carbon sink, but scientists report in the journal Nature that single fire released more carbon into the atmosphere than the entire Arctic tundra absorbs every year. NPR's Christopher Joyce reports.
It's peak field season right now for scientists who study the Arctic, like Michelle Mack.
I'm at Tulik Lake Field Station in a trailer that's on a gravel pad that's in the middle of Arctic tundra.
Mack is an ecologist from the University of Florida who prefers the desolate beauty of the North Slope of Alaska and the snow-capped Brooks Mountain Range. She says what the Anaktuvuk fire did, burn through 400 square miles of tundra, amazed her.
We've never seen anything like it in this area. What's surprising is that forests have huge trees, whereas tundra has 6-inch tall, tiny little plants.
Nonetheless, the fire sizzled for 3 months, then burst into a major conflagration before snowfall put it out. So if there weren't any trees, what was there to burn?
It's coming from the soil.
Organic matter, dead plants, accumulated over decades. And what set it off was dry weather and then a lightning strike.
There's been a marked increase in lightning strike activity on the North Slope, particularly in the last 10 years.
But Mack was really surprised when she calculated how much carbon that fire put up into the atmosphere. It was 2 million tons. Is that a lot? Well, think of it this way. Every year, the Arctic tundra absorbs more carbon from the atmosphere than it releases. It's a net carbon sink. Because carbon warms the atmosphere, the Arctic is actually cooling the planet by taking up carbon. But Mack says the Anaktuvuk fire reversed that equation.
One fire. That alone is enough to offset the whole uptake.
That's right. The fire put out more carbon than the entire Arctic tundra absorbed in 2007. That includes Alaska, Canada, Greenland, and Russia. Mack's findings are part of an increasingly feverish research effort going on in the Arctic. Arctic sea ice has been melting, putting more moisture in the air and creating more thunderstorms. Geographer Eric Kashishki of the University of Maryland is also in Alaska this week, studying, among other things, why there have been so many fires there recently. Between the region's big forests and the carbon-rich tundra soil, he says there's a lot of carbon that's at risk of getting loose.
So you might see in a single fire event 30 to 40 to 50 to 60 years of carbon released instantaneously. And so I think this is part of a larger story that you're seeing deeper burning fires across the landscape, and together they're really going to change things pretty dramatically.
Besides pumping more carbon into the atmosphere, the Arctic fires also melt the permafrost. That's the permanent layer of frozen soil and water underneath the surface. When that disappears, so does a major source of moisture for the tundra.
It does have cause for concern. We might be seeing really major changes in the way that these ecosystems function in high northern latitudes, and fire might be that trigger.
The research appears in the latest issue of the journal Nature. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
Jonathan Kaplan describes himself as a serial entrepreneur. He started his first businesses when he was a kid, with a paper route, snow shoveling, then landscaping. He's had a printing company and a DJ service playing Sweet 16 parties and bar mitzvahs, all before he hit college. He's picked up speed since then, founding several technology companies, including the one that created the Flip digital camera. He sold that to Cisco for more than $500 million. The company later discontinued the camera. His current project is a chain of grilled cheese restaurants called The Melt, set to open in August. Kaplan told Morning Edition's Mary Louise Kelly why he's taking on grilled cheese.
Well, it's a really simple answer to that question, and that is grilled cheese makes people happy. And when I created The Flip, I wanted to really think about a way to change the way people captured and shared video, a way for consumers to feel empowered and make memories. And, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia, there's a lot of memories, and there's a lot of happiness in the very simple grilled cheese and soup.
You actually went out to Mall of America, is that right, and talked to people about what kind of food makes them happy?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Grilled cheese is one of these food items that people talk about with emotional connection. You know, when you're sitting with a friend and you say, what do you think of a salad? They're like, oh, salads are okay. But if you say, what do you think of a grilled cheese? They say, I love grilled cheese. I mean, and they conjures up memories and nostalgia. And the words that I was hearing were just so exceptional. I mean, it reminded me so much of chocolate or, you know, some other things that maybe we won't mention on the air. But it's really
comfort food.
You know, comfort food. It's a real comfort food. So I did go to the Mall of America about 10 years ago, and I wanted to test this with everyday Americans. And the reaction was pretty much the same. People love grilled cheese.
You went out to Mall of America 10 years ago. Does that mean this is an idea you've had in your back pocket all this time, just waiting for the right moment?
You know, one of the things that's interesting about entrepreneurs is they tend to have a lot of ideas all the time. And 10 years ago, I was thinking about what should I be doing next? And Flip hadn't started yet. And I just finished my last business and sold it to Sega of Japan. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I thought, hey, maybe I'll do a grilled cheese and soup chain. We'll call it something. I don't even know what we'll call it. And so I went to the Mall of America and did some research. And just as I was doing some research, I realized, you know, there's something else I really want to do first. And that's when Flip started, and now it's time to do The Melt.
All right. So will you tell us what's in your back pocket right now that 10 years from now we'll be talking to you about?
I can't wait to come back on the air and tell you.
All right. Jonathan Kaplan, as we said, you have started a lot of businesses over the years. Maybe the highest profile up to now was the Flip camera, which eventually did sell to Cisco. They shut it down. What did you learn from that?
Well, I learned that anything is possible. When I started out, we wanted to democratize video. This was a pretty tall order to do when you had the likes of the Sonys and the Panasonics and the Canons. And, you know, you have a group of young entrepreneurs that didn't really know much about video at all. But I knew that we were onto something. We ended up selling more than 7 million units and really, I think, changing video for the better. And I'm very proud of what the team created.
Were you disappointed when it was shut down?
Well, of course, I was disappointed when it was shut down. It was very, very disappointing. But I'm also a business person, and I understand why Cisco has to make business decisions. And they're still using our technology for many things that are happening at Cisco. But if you look at that business and the idea that we were only a billion of the $45 billion in revenue that that company generates every year, you know, I have to respect their decision. But I'm really excited about The Melt.
As you gear up for this new venture, have you found it hard to start a new company in the current business climate? I mean, what advice do you have for other people out there who have an idea and might have a harder time than you have had trying to get the money to get it going?
Well, I think that, you know, right now the economy is in a place where great ideas are going to get funded. There are some times in our economy in 2001, as an example, and maybe a year ago, where it was very hard to get any idea funded. But I think right now we're coming out of our recession, and I feel like great ideas will be funded. The advice that I would have for entrepreneurs is very simple, which is stick to your idea, stay focused, hire great people, and be sure that you're as passionate about your idea as you're telling everybody you are. Because if you are, if you're willing to eat hot dogs, if you're willing to take no salary, if you're willing to hear no so many times that it sounds like yes, then you'll probably be successful.
Entrepreneur Jonathan Kaplan. His latest venture is a chain of grilled cheese restaurants called The Melt, opening next month. Kaplan spoke with NPR's Mary Louise Kelly.
This is Robert Siegel. Every afternoon on All Things Considered, we offer more than just the latest news. The program challenges ideas and searches for meaning behind the events that shape our world. All Things Considered gives you a place to travel to, a voice to connect with, a story that reminds you that sometimes it's worth stopping everything just to listen. All Things Considered, every afternoon from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 29th of July, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist Booth Tarkington, born Indianapolis, 1869, wrote about the Midwest and its people. He was one of the most popular novelists of the early 20th century, famous for his novel The Magnificent Ambersons and also Alice Adams. Booth Tarkington, who said, "There are two things that will be believed of any man whatsoever, and one of them is that he has taken to drink." It was on this day, 1890, Vincent van Gogh died, having shot himself in the chest in a wheat field 2 days before. He made it home to his own bed. When he was found, he said, "I shot myself. I only hope I haven't botched it." His brother Theo was sent for. He rushed from Paris to the bedside. Van Gogh's friend Emile Bernard wrote about the funeral, "The sun was terribly hot outside. We climbed the hill outside Auvers, talking about him, about the daring impulse he had given to art, of the great projects he was always thinking about, and about the good he had done to all of us. We reached the cemetery, a small new cemetery strewn with new tombstones. It's on a little hill above the fields that were ripe for harvest, under the wide blue sky that he would still have loved. Then he was lowered into the grave. Anyone would have started crying at that moment. The day was too much made for him, for one not to imagine that he was still alive and enjoying it." Experts have argued